Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
So I promised you a lovely surprise because my next guest is somebody you'll recognize. In fact, I think he's just come back home. John Perlman is my next guest, and this is obviously Impact. And John, thank you so much for agreeing to talk to us and for coming through this evening.
No, thanks very much for having me. It's lovely to be back in a Kaya FM studio.
We call this feature Impact because we speak to people who are really doing amazing things. And some we don't know. They're not really big names. And some are. But these are people who, in the midst of everything, are doing something, their bit, to move this nation forward. And we think you're one of those people.
So welcome. Thank you.
Welcome. We obviously want to speak about Dreamfields, which is a project you've been running for, is it 11 years now?
No, it's 17 years
oh
now,
my
actually.
Oh yeah. My goodness. And it's such an interesting project to me because the impact that I think sport has on young people is incredible. Maybe not necessarily quantifiable, but it is absolutely incredible. What was the original idea?
So the original idea, Pamelo, started taking shape in 2006 when I heard that South Africa was going to be hosting the World Cup. And, you know, a World Cup is a complicated thing for any society because you often end up spending money you don't have on things you don't need. And my mind was full of all of that kind of thing, you know. FIFA come in and they force you to do a whole lot of stuff. And I was finding myself getting quite grumpy about all of this and thinking, well, what benefits are ordinary people going to get out of the World Cup? And then I thought to myself, well, rather than complain about it, you know, and be the unhappy host of your own party, why don't you do something about it? So fast forward to now, some of the things we were doing from 2007 when we launched are not things we do now. For example, we used to build football fields.
Okay.
We built 22 of them, I think. But we don't do that anymore for reasons I can go into a little bit later.
Yeah.
But the Dreamfields model now is very simple. We work mainly in rural schools. Mm. We have about 80,000 kids in the program, girls mainly playing netball, but a bit of football, boys playing football. We also do some athletics as well. And the basic idea is that any kid who wants to play football or netball can play. The boys play five-a-side football, the girls play netball, a mini version of the game. Particularly for the smaller kids, netball poles that are not as high.
Yes.
We hire unemployed young people to run the program. We've got 185 of those working around the country. And the idea is very simple, that you offer the sport within the school so that if one school drops out of the program, it doesn't affect anybody else.
Gotcha.
There's no transport costs. We have coaching workshops to train the coaches, train the teachers. We try and keep the breakables in the model as small as minimal as possible, which is why we don't build football fields anymore.
Got you. But you also provide them with a lovely kit.
Yeah.
This bag of lovely goodies.
Talk
to me about the bag.
So there are two kinds of bags, actually. Mm-hmm. There's something called the Dream Bag, which is brand new football or netball kit, boots, balls, for the girls' sneakers, and it's brand new. Right at the beginning, people said, oh, but why don't you do secondhand stuff? And we know these people in America, they send over shiploads of stuff. And right from the beginning, we said, our kids are going to get new stuff. Which doesn't belong to individual kids, it belongs to the schools. That's one of the bags we do. The other is called a Dream Seed Kit, which is for the five-a-side football, for example, which is much more basic. Not full kit, just colored bibs, different colored bibs, and lots and lots and lots of soccer balls and netballs.
You know, you've just mentioned why it was important for you to insist you wanted new shoes for these kids. It's more than just a bag, is it not?
Yeah.
I mean, for a child who, for many, maybe have never had new shoes, and you know, the privilege of just being a child, because I think they go through so much.
Yeah.
Talk to me about, you know, what that bag for you represents.
So I'll just tell you a very quick story about kids who've never had anything new, because right near the beginning of the program on a freezing cold Friday night on the Cape Flats, we were having a tournament and all the kids were saying the shoes don't fit and the boots don't fit. And I was getting really uncomfortable because the sponsors were there. And then I went to a kid and I said, just give me your boots. Mm-hmm. And they hadn't taken the paper out of the toes. And what that made me realize is exactly your point, Pamela, that never mind new boots. They'd never had new anything. So back to what you're saying, sure. I think that this translates on so many different levels. So first of all, they get to play in brand new kit, and the transformation of these quite timid little kids into looking like the football players that they idolize.
Yeah.
But there's another layer to it as well that's really crucial. We work mostly in rural South Africa, and rural kids qualify through being district champions to play in provincial tournaments. Mm. And the importance of them arriving looking just like their city cousins is incalculable. And I'll illustrate that with an example. Some of your listeners may know the area of Kwambonambi, which is north of Richards Bay, and it's a very rural area. The girls from Mbonambi Primary in 2023 came third in the national championships as under 12s.
Wow.
And they came back in 2024, and they are national champions.
Oh, my word.
And their under 10 team are KZN champions. So
you can
start ripples that become waves with exactly what you're saying. It's not just the boots in the bag. It's the way the boots in the bag make you feel.
We've spoken a lot about, you know, budgets that don't exist anymore, government budgets. And of course, usually the first things to go is art and sport.
Yes.
We've seen that.
Yeah.
And I really wonder, with your own observation, what you've seen sport do for young people who don't ordinarily get to be children, who are not allowed to just be free and to play and to be allowed to do that.
So I think you're making a crucial point that the impact of sport can begin right from the first moment when teams are chosen to play sport and you're not chosen.
Yeah.
Because that can begin a lifetime of, I'm not good at football, so I'm not in the football team. I went to the choir, but they went, yo, who is that boy in the back? And then you move to the back. I'm not great at maths.
Yeah.
I'm struggling with all sorts of things.
Yeah.
And we wanted a model. It took us a while to arrive at this insight, but we wanted a model where no child gets turned away because we don't want that to become literally a habit of a lifetime.
Mm.
And so when we, at the beginning of every school year, say, literally, we call a school assembly and we say, who wants to play football? And every hand that goes up belongs to a kid who's going to be in a team. And one of my favorite pictures, because we've got an incredible archive of photos from the work we've done over the years, is at one of these team selections, there's this little boy, and for people who, this isn't TV, he's got his hands in prayer. Oh, somebody please choose me. And I wanted to say to him, you're going to be picked, maybe not first, maybe not fifth, but you're going to play.
You're
going to
play.
So I think that thing of being kids is the joy of play and the fact that school is about more than academics, but it's also about saying you belong and you, for as long as you want to play, maybe you decide you want to do something else, you want to do dance.
Mm.
That's great as well. But in the early years of your life, nobody's going to come along and say to you, you're out. Because I think that's very damaging, and we underestimate the consequences of that if it happens too frequently in a young person's life.
What kind of feedback do you get from the schools themselves, principals, teachers, you know, when they suddenly see children have this resource? I'm sure it must have some impact.
It definitely does. So I'll give you the positives and then I'll reflect on some of the complexities, Pamela. The teachers, I mean, on a fundamental level, we work in a very, very poor part of the Northern Cape, as much of the Northern Cape is. And they said our attendance is up by
20%. Wow, they want to come to school.
Kids want to come to school because there's something they enjoy doing.
Wow.
And by the way, we weren't unique in that because they'd also introduced choral music and they were seeing on two different levels but related how different children who like different things were saying, okay, there's more to school than being bored at the back of the class. So there's that. There's the disruptive element of children who are not good at school and then they sit at the back and they tap the head of the kid in front of them or they crunch up paper and throw it or whatever. And our teachers have shown themselves to be incredibly skilled in deploying sport by saying, okay, we're not going to say if you do that you can't play, but we are going to say you've got to finish your work
and then
before you can play.
Got you.
So there's wonderful stuff there. The one complication, though, is particularly for rural schools, teachers often live very far from where the school is, 30, 40 Ks. So if you take an Mpumalanga example, they might teach in a village like Agincourt or one of those, but they'll live in Bushbuck Ridge. So they need to kind of
leave,
which is why we've brought in this model of community coaches. A community coach has to be unemployed, but crucially they have to live in walking distance of the school. So, yeah, we learn and we figure it out as we go along. But schools have been fabulous partners. You know, we hear a lot of negative stuff about our educators, about the schools, but trust me, there's a lot of good, strong, positive energy, in, particularly in our primary schools where we work.
John, you know what that means. You've got headphones in front of you there. And that's because, you know, we've got callers.
You've got
people who want to speak to you. Let's just see if you're connected there and you're able to hear. We've got Ntate Selby, who's a regular on the show, who has a thing or two to say. Hello, Ntate Selby.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm blessed beyond measure.
Excellent. Welcome.
I'm a brother. How are you there?
Yes, I'm doing well, thanks. How are you, Ntate Selby?
I'm blessed beyond measure.
Good.
I'm very much glad to hear what you are doing, my brother. Because I'm troubled by the situation at the rural areas.
Uh-huh.
Because in the rural areas, we've got children who are supposed to be in a professional league at this point in time.
Yeah.
But they couldn't make it because of lack of funds, because they lacked resources.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what we are doing is very much important to South Africa, because there are children who are supposed to win a CAF Cup for South Africa. But they couldn't, because they couldn't make it to the top. What you are doing, I'm glad.
Oh, thank you.
Because in 3 years, that is coming. Even next 2 years, we are going to see the fruits of what you are doing.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just tell you, we've got one young man who is now at Pirates. We've got one young boy. They're in the junior ranks, so, you know, we don't know what their future will be in terms of making a professional career. We've got a young boy from the Cottondale area of Mpumalanga. In fact, it's Manyeleti who's gone to Sundowns. We've got three boys from... now two, in fact, who are from an area called Kwamsane near Mtubatuba that are at AmaZulu. We've got girls who've been picked for provincial netball teams, and we've got a young girl from Northwest who's the national 1,200 meters athletics champion. So you never know. We don't know what the future is for them, but at least they're making steps in the right direction.
No, I can see the fruits of the job that you're doing.
No, thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Selby.
Thank you.
Wow. I mean, that must be so fulfilling on so many fronts, seeing these young people, you know, reach those heights.
Yeah, you know it is. I mean, right at the beginning, people said to me, is the measure of your success going to be how many people reach that kind of height? And it is one measure. There's no doubt that it's gratifying. But, you know, when, for example, these girls from Umbonambi Primary became national netball champions, there was a parade through the town.
Wow.
You know, and so that's also a measure of success, because there will be younger girls and younger boys there saying, this is great, you know, I also want to be in that parade. Mm. But maybe their destiny is to sing.
Yeah.
Maybe their destiny is to be lawyers. Maybe their destiny is to start a small business that becomes a big business. The message for me is that step forward, do something you enjoy, learn what you can from it, get the very best out of working in a team, learn the discipline of saying, I must be there every week at 2 o'clock, otherwise I'm not going to play. And those lessons you may well apply as a surgeon.
Yeah. You know, we hear a lot about NPOs struggling for funding now.
Right.
People saying it's harder. I think you saw today some NGOs taking the government of Gauteng to court because they are in desperate need of this funding. Has it become harder for you to raise money?
Yeah. It's always been challenging.
Mm.
But we've learned a lot as we've gone on. So in the early years with the World Cup coming, there was lots of one-off funding. Because people, Pamela wanted to celebrate as they should, this amazing thing.
Yeah.
But they weren't really in it for the longer run of actually adopting 16, 18 schools. And so we've got fewer funders now, but we've got more committed funders.
Oh, lovely.
And we've changed our model where every project is ring-fenced so that if, you know, and there are many good reasons why devoted, dedicated funders will say, listen, we're stopping.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're not the center of their universe and that's just a reality. But if any funder of a project leaves, the other projects are not affected.
Got you.
Yeah, so it's harder, but we're off to a great start this year. With some really significant commitments, so holding thumbs.
John, sport has always meant something to you. When did it sort of become you, in a way?
So I loved playing football as a kid.
Were you any good?
No, I wasn't especially good. In fact, that's why I identify with a little boy praying not to be left out of the team. But I was decent enough playing football. My first work as a journalist was as a sports reporter. Mm. So I wrote about football initially, eventually got an opportunity to be a football commentator at the SABC. At a certain point, I didn't want to be a sports journalist anymore.
Mm.
But I've always been fascinated by sport in society and of course South Africa is such an unbelievably rich place for that conversation. I am a fanatical watcher of sport. Usually I have to watch on my own because it's so unpleasant. Yeah, it's very unpleasant for other people, and my wife has been known to make arrangements to be out of the house. And yeah, we've had to navigate a few things, particularly around matches on Saturdays.
And, you know, we speak of what this does for schools, for communities, and for young people, especially those who are involved. What has it done for you?
It's such a great question, that, because in many ways, my thinking in starting Dreamfields was a gift to myself on a number of levels. I mentioned right at the beginning not wanting to be the grumpy host of my own party with the World Cup coming.
Yeah.
But I've learned an enormous amount. Mm. I've learned to be patient.
Mm.
I've learned to be a little bit more measured, you know, particularly when we were building fields.
Mm.
I realized when they were late or over budget or hadn't started that I was now the guy who I used to have on radio shows saying, but Minister, where are the houses? and realize that
right now,
I was that guy,
yeah.
You know, and people would say, but you promised you'd do this and you promised you'd do that. So that's been a profound learning. But I think what I've been just most blessed with is the opportunity to wake up every day and see if you can make some kind of material difference in the lives of young people and so on. And the absolute pleasure, I mean, I don't get to travel as much as I did for a number of reasons. The most important one is that I've got a team of astonishing colleagues led by a really remarkable guy who hopefully you'll have on your show at some point. Yeah. To tell his Dreamfield story, Silas Mashavo, who's the leader of our team in the field. And they're in the field because they're good at that, and bluntly, I'm not. But every time I do go to an event, it's just like, oh, man, I'd forgotten how joyous this is. So I'm fed by it deep into my life.
You do a lot of current affairs news stories, and
right.
You get to see this up front. So you run Dreamfields, but you get to see society in another way and other things going on, particularly in the rural areas that you've spoken of. Does that affect you?
Yeah, I think it mainly affects me in a positive way, because what it gives me a really strong sense of is always of possibility. And that when you get beyond the big, seemingly impressive, but often very vague conversations about, are we going to do this? And but actually, the point at which the Dreamfields rubber hits the road is where you need seven people to do five straightforward but taxing things. So it might be organized people to run a coaching course or organize the transport for 200 kids to come to an event. And what I see of South Africa in those kinds of interactions is overwhelmingly positive, that most people want to get stuff done. People are argumentative and combative. If I told you they weren't, you'd say, well, obviously you don't work in South Africa. We are also those people. But fundamentally, everybody actually wants something better to happen. So I'm feel incredibly enriched by it, but I also feel I've learned a lot.
Do these young people seem to you like we can be hopeful about our future?
I definitely do. And you know, one thing that really strikes me, particularly visiting primary schools, because that's where I've spent most of my time, is how well looked after things are. You know, you arrive and their gardens and rocks have been painted. And children paint murals. And when you have a school assembly, the kids, they sort of line up. We joke about it, and I said, let's only work in primary schools because the children are much easier to herd and get them to do what you ask. But in actual fact, one of our big goals is to really expand our footprint in high schools, because I think those years of grade 8, 9 and 10 are absolutely crucial. You're the youngest in the high school instead of top of the tree in primary school. Adolescence, sexuality, all that stuff's playing out. So we're working a lot with our funders to say we need that footprint to be expanded.
Let's take a quick break and we'll be back with John Pillman, and we'll discuss with yourselves as well, 086 00 00 959, if you like. Give us a call, you know, let's hear what you have to say. Maybe you've been a part of Dreamfields, maybe, just maybe. Give us a call. I'll be back in a moment. John Pillman is in studio with us. This is Impact, by the way, and we're talking about Dreamfields, his wonderful, wonderful project. And John, offline, we were talking about some interesting challenges one gets to come across. And sometimes maybe, you know, it forces you to come out of your own little cocoon to appreciate what really needs to get done. Talk to me about some of those little challenges.
Yeah, boy. I mean, the challenges I've faced. One of them was I remember we built a football field for a community in Mpumalanga, east of Nelspruit, called Drie Koppies. And we had a fabulous launch, really a massive launch. I remember there was a journalist who interviewed this one young boy and said, "How many people do you think are here?" And he said, "I think 35,000. It was about 5,000, but I just loved it.
Yeah, that,
in his imagination,
yeah, 35,000.
But the next morning, I switched on my laptop, looked at my emails, and it was a list of complaints about you haven't done this and you haven't done that. And I must admit, I was a bit, first of all, I was angry. Then I was quite, but one of my colleagues, the other person who's been crucial in building Dreamfields, is a guy called Graham Barth. And Graham said to me, "People don't believe you will come back."
They don't.
And because nobody has ever really come more than once. You know, people have drifted in and drifted out. And mostly it's been disappointing. They said, once they see you again and they see you again, this thing of, "But we need this and we need that, and why haven't you done that?" And that was an incredibly important insight, not just for me, but for the whole team, that actually we have to establish our good faith. And the fact that we arrived with loads of presents doesn't now make the absent uncle a favorite.
You know,
there's some more hours you've got to put in.
Yeah.
So that for me was an incredibly important learning. And it's proved to be true because actually the conversations calm down.
Yes.
People say, "What have you brought for us this time? And you say, "Just me." And they say, "Oh, all right, next time." But let's what are we going to do, you know? Not what have you brought it, but let's talk about what we're going to do. So central in my learning.
You know, you've spoken to me about some of your immediate goals, achievements, and at least dreams that you'd like to do more in high schools and so on. But the big, big, big picture going forward, what is the big, big picture?
It
changes, does it not?
Yes, it does. And interestingly enough, we had our team strategy session 2 weeks ago, and that was one of the themes of discussion. Is there a big picture, or is this as big as we're going to get, and do we want to go deeper? And we didn't quite resolve it. I've always been very wary of people who announce massive plans, you know, and it's quite a popular marketing thing to say we're going to do a million. they love a million. And you were mentioning your wonderful work with libraries. And I'm sure there are people who say, "Oh, no, but now we need hundreds of these." And you say, "Well, let's do five. Make sure they get used. Make sure the books are looked after.
Well, let's get the children reading."
Yes. And if we do five, well, we can do 10. If we do 10 well, we can make that 20. Then we can do 40. But so we've never been the million guys.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I think the big picture is one of them is sustainability.
Yes.
So I've got to, as the principal fundraising person, look at what makes Dreamfield sustainable in 5 years. We focus, for example, for a while on building up reserves so that the project, even if we hit some serious potholes, we could sustain ourselves. COVID chowed all that money.
I was going to ask what happened in that time, because apart from the money, just the children not being able to go out to play.
So it was very difficult. But what we did is we developed something called the safe sports model, which didn't involve children playing, for example, five-a-side football. But what we did was we had them working in smaller groups and they would get points for each exercise that was a skill. So the netball players would have to get the ball in the hoop, complete successfully 20 passes and so on.
Yeah.
So that got us through and we kept them busy. But what was amazing, another of my very brilliant colleagues, a young man called Mpo Ramila, he said, "Why don't we take that and turn it into a foundation phase program for children who too small to play contact sport, but we can get them playing in a competitive way, doing exercises that will teach them, start getting them ready to kick footballs in a in a half-decent way." So faith's a funny thing, you know, out of all these lemons, Paul came up with the lemonade.
Yeah. Gosh, it's been wonderful talking to you. I mean,
wonderful that you invited me.
And I am absolutely thrilled. I mean, how many people do you have in your team?
So the team is actually, the core team is very small.
Yeah.
We're 9 people. Mm. But what we've just done, we've hired 2 people. And for the first time, we've hired people who are not based in Joburg, but that are in our big growth areas, one in Mpumalanga, one in northern KZN. And I think that's going to be our model going forward, that we work with people 2-3 years, we make them part of the team, but they stay where they are. And I'm really excited to see how that works out.
Gosh, it's been wonderful talking to you. Did you imagine it to be this sustainable? I know you worry about sustainability, but did you think it would last this long?
So at the end of our first 3 years, we were looking at possibly closing. And what we learned from that moment, because at that, our model then was to have big funders who funded everything. Yeah. And out of that experience, the details are unimportant. We thought, okay, we need a model where nobody holds our destiny in their hands.
Yeah.
We've got to have... And that's why I said every project needs to be self-funded.
Yeah.
I think once we got into that ring-fenced, smaller-scale funding for every project, then I believed we could keep it going. But we had some scary, lie-awake-all-night moments.
So we obviously have a new Minister of Arts who speaks of sport quite a bit, trying to bring it back to schools. In your view, I mean, because you've been on the ground, what do we have to do immediately? What can be done?
So I think the most important thing, you know, there are regular kind of conferences about what to do about school sport, which, to be honest, we don't often get invited to, which is
interesting,
but disappointing. But also quite foolish in my opinion. But let me park that. I think what they need to do is do the simple and the scalable to get a mass base of participation where lots and lots of kids are playing. I then believe off that base, there are already centers and sources of excellence, and there are people who are looking for the very best kids. I think that thing of high-level elite school competition, it's not easily done, but I think those things are in place. I think it's getting resources of equipment and organizational skills so that what we do, literally in every school, every kid who wants to play, and, you know, we've tried to engage with government and say, we do not want money.
Yes.
We'll fund ourselves, but what we want from you is a systematic engagement around what we believe we've learned. And if you hear what we've learned and you don't want to use it, that's fine. But at least give us... We work very well with the Department of Basic Education.
What level? National?
Yeah. So national sits on our board. And then at every district level, the officials in the Department of Education are great. And some of them are in Department of Sports, Arts and Culture. They're terrific as well. But yeah... We hope at some point to get a chance to present what we think is a tried and tested model. Mm. We don't think it's perfect, but we've paid a lot of the school fees up front. We could save him some time.
Some
and
of
money.
That pain.
Yeah.
John, it's been wonderful. Thank you for coming.
And
through.
Wonderful for me to spend this time with you. I appreciate it.
Really, really. All the best. And people obviously who want to drop in their little 2 cents like myself, how do we do that?
johnpullman@dreamfieldsproject.org.
Excellent.
Contact me there.
Fantastic. Thank you, John Pullman. Thank you for coming through. All right, folks. That's him. Huh? I mean, I promised you a big star. He's back in the building. And thank you very much for that. That's our impact for the day. We'll be back tomorrow at 8.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.